And welcome back to Our Delaware Valley. And yes, it is Our Delaware Valley with a different opening this morning. I'm Laura Lewis. And with us today, Sean Kelly, Eastern State Penitentiary Senior Vice President and Director of Interpretation and Project Lead for Hidden Lives Illuminated. And that's what we're hearing right now. But let's get started with, would you give us that mission statement for Eastern State Penitentiary?
Well, historically, Eastern State Penitentiary was once the most famous prison in the world. It changed the entire discussion about what prisons should do. You know, after centuries of prisons that were dungeons and torture chambers that were meant to scare and to frighten people and to punish them, Eastern State was the first of these prisons that said, we can do better, we can rehabilitate people. Eastern State is the world's first true penitentiary. It's a building designed to inspire penance or true regret in the hearts of people who have broken the law. And so the entire prison, it opened in 1829 on farmland outside of Philadelphia. Today it's about five blocks from the Philadelphia Museum of Art, but back in the 1820s, that was farmland out there. And the entire building was designed for solitary confinement with the belief that people are inherently good, and if they look into their hearts, they would become remorseful, they'd become penitent. And so the entire building was built for solitary confinement.
But today you've dedicated it towards information and discussion.
That's right. The prison, well, eventually they gave up that system of solitary confinement, even though 300 prisons across the world are modeled after it. So it's the grandfather of a whole series of prisons across the world. But they eventually gave up that system of solitary confinement. The prison closed in 1971. The city of Philadelphia planned to tear it down, and it just sat there for about 20 years. Completely empty. And today it's a museum. We opened it in 1994 as a museum, and we talk about the history of Eastern State Penitentiary, and we also talk about the history of other prisons and what's happening in criminal justice today.
And so that's really its mission today.
We talk about both. We see it as all the same thing. We talk about the history of Eastern State Penitentiary. We talk about what's happening in criminal justice today. We think it's all part of the same big discussion. So if you want to come to Eastern State and learn about, for instance, Al Capone, who lived there in the 1920s, we have a wonderful display about Al Capone. Or if you want to learn about the architecture, which is really glorious. I mean, they built the inside of that prison to look like a church. And so if you want to go and experience those things and that's your interest, of course, those things are all still there. But we also have now exhibits that are about the criminal justice system today. The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. And a lot of people in the United States from all sides of the political spectrum are looking at our criminal justice system and saying there's a lot of room for improvement here. And so we try to engage visitors. Anyone who wants to, we can engage pretty deeply in those conversations as well.
Okay. Now we have 28 minutes to go. So so now we're going to go. We're going to back up that whole thing and really start going into it in depth, please.
Okay.
So when it was built, and you say it was the first true penitentiary, and you talk about before you would, a prison was something that was scary, and you would expect torture there.
Sure.
But in the end, it turns out it was more torturous than a year or so of being poked. So talk about what was the thought process that put this as a model prison, and there were some very famous names bandied about at that time.
Sure. The thought process, the people who built Eastern State Penitentiary were very influenced by the Quaker belief that people are good. Quakers believe that every human being is born with a good heart, and that if they're not acting on their best instincts, it must be the influence of a corrupt society, of lack of discipline as a child. There's something turning these inherently good creatures. They believe all of us are good people. So if they're behaving badly, there's something went wrong. And so they were influenced by this idea, and they thought what we need to do is isolate people from the corrupting influences of society. This is an inherently really optimistic view of human nature. By the way, obviously, I mentioned earlier they gave up this system. As optimistic as that view was, it didn't actually turn out to be correct. In fact, today we know that solitary confinement is an extremely efficient form of punishment. It's psychologically damaging. But they believed that solitary confinement could bring out the best in people. And so although what they were doing, they were putting people in solitary confinement for years on end, today looks like a form of torture. At the time, these were the best minds in trying to rethink what prisons can do. And they knew it was a harsh punishment, but they believed that, you know, a typical punishment in the early days at Eastern State was 2 years. And so they thought, it's a hard punishment, but after 2 years, this person has the best shot we can give them at going back and rejoining society as a healthy, productive member. So anyway, they built this prison for solitary confinement. But what's interesting is that on the outside of the prison, so the inside of the prison solitary confinement, it looks like a church. It's got high arched hallways. It's got sunlight ports. It's more than 1,000 skylights. Sunlight pours in through the ceilings of these skylights and fills the whole space with light. But it's filled with these little tiny white rooms designed for solitary confinement. So on the inside, there was this revolutionary and profoundly optimistic view that people could change. On the outside of the prison, they still wanted to make the old threat. And so the outside of the prison looks like a castle. And so castles are exactly what this prison was designed to replace. You know, for two or three centuries, people had been putting prisoners in the basements of castles and dungeons, you know, with all the torture chambers and all the horrors that could take place in a dungeon. Well, on the front of this prison, the inside is filled with light and sun and fresh air. The outside still looks like a castle. So if you look at the front of Eastern State Penitentiary, it's got battlements and arrow-slit windows. It's all theater. The front of the building is designed like a stage set to scare people, but none of it's actually functional.
It looks like a fortress.
It looks like a fortress, but if you stand on top of the walls, you can't, you know, battlements are designed for battles. You know, you're supposed to be able to shoot from between those little notches in the top of a castle, but ours are so low that if you stood there, you'd see someone's shoes in the low point, and you can't stand back there. The whole front of the building is a theater set that says, we're going to punish your body. But on the inside of the building, they were really trying to affect people's souls.
But they were trying to affect people's souls, but they didn't see those corridors filled with those thousands of skylights and the sunshine and that church-like appearance inside. It was true solitary confinement, wasn't it?
It was a very hard punishment. It was solitary confinement. You mentioned earlier that some of the great thinkers of that generation were involved in thinking about this, including people like Benjamin Franklin and Benjamin Rush. There are people who really had the best interest of the people who were incarcerated there in mind, but their vision for their best idea was profoundly misguided. I mean, really a terrible idea.
When I said true solitary, they didn't even interact with even the guards.
The guards wore socks over their shoes. I always find that the most chilling detail, that as the officers walked up and down the corridors, they wanted their footsteps to be muffled. That's how focused they were on silence. They wanted the inside of that building to have people commented on. People wrote about this, the unearthly silence of the inside of Eastern State Penitentiary in the 1820s, the 1830s, 1840s, in the very early days. They were completely focused on silence. And so you think of a prison today and they're typically very noisy places, not the prisons modeled on Eastern State Penitentiary. As I say, there are about 300 of them. And Eastern State is the grandfather of all of those prisons. And it was known for this eerie, unearthly silence. And people didn't get visits from family. They got no reading materials. They didn't interact with the guards unless there was, of course, they had to at some point, but they didn't socialize with the guards. The guards weren't there to make conversation. They lived for 23 hours a day inside of a white cell. And for 2 half-hour shifts a day, they went outside into their own personal exercise yard with 4 walls but no roof. They'd get fresh air twice a day. The other 23 hours a day, they were alone inside. The only book they had to read was the Bible. The majority of the people incarcerated there didn't know how to read anyway. They were taught some kind of a trade, like shoemaking or weaving. And this was what passed for the early 1800s form of true radical prison reform. And so we see that the legacy of that is the attitude that, you know, we can do better, and let's think about how we can do better and think about the outcomes for the people who we are incarcerating, because the vast majority, even today, the vast majority of people are going to be our neighbors someday. So how do we think in the benefit of all of us in the long term to try to help people reenter society with a shot at leading productive lives and being good neighbors? So we consider ourselves very much in that legacy. However, what they were actually doing inside the cell blocks of Eastern State Penitentiary in the 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, today is exactly what you would call a form of psychological torture.
It never was a model prison, though. Even after that, when it shifted to a general population that moved within the walls mm-hmm. and were interacting with each other, it never really did succeed as a prison, did it?
It didn't succeed as a prison. It was a model in the sense that it was copied. I mean, if you look at the records from those early decades, there were people from governments all over the world coming into Eastern State Penitentiary from particularly in Europe. So European countries and the colonies they ran all over the world were building these prisons that look like a star. So from above, Eastern State Penitentiary looks like a star. It's got a central surveillance hub in the middle. So if you stand in the middle of Eastern State Penitentiary, you can see these. It's like the spokes of a wheel. And if you went into a prison today, or for that matter, a shopping mall, somewhere there's a room where an officer is looking at a whole wall of video monitors. That room in the middle of Eastern State Penitentiary serves the same purpose. You can stand there and see down every corridor, see everything from one spot. And that model of a star-shaped prison designed for solitary confinement was copied all over the world. It's called the Pennsylvania model. Basically, every prison in the 1800s was modeled after either Eastern State Penitentiary or Sing Sing. So most American prisons are modeled after Sing Sing. Most European prisons and prisons in European colonies were modeled after Eastern State Penitentiary. They look like a star designed for solitary confinement. So it was a model in that sense, but they knew there were people from almost the very first days that said, this is not working. This is not a good idea. The most famous actually is Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens traveled to the United States. 1842, the prison was still new, and he had heard about this famous solitary confinement prison in Philadelphia. And Charles Dickens had a lifelong fascination with prisons. They turn up again and again in his books. And so he wrote to the warden of Eastern State and said, I'd like to visit. I'd like to meet some of the people who are incarcerated there. And he spent a day at Eastern State Penitentiary. He went back to England and he wrote a book about the United States, and he dedicated a full chapter to Eastern State Penitentiary. And he started off by saying, similar to what I was just saying, that the people who designed the system had the best interests. I mean, these are the most good-hearted people of their generation and looking at the effects of incarceration on people. But he went on to say what, in hindsight, he was absolutely right about, that kind of solitary confinement is profoundly damaging to the psyche, which is funny, you know, because if you say this to a second grader today, if you say, we do this, we bring in groups of kids for tours, and you'll say, what do you think would happen if you put someone in solitary confinement for 2 years? And a second grader will tell you that it'll make someone insane. It's just common knowledge. But in 1842, when Charles Dickens visited, it wasn't yet common knowledge. There was a good-hearted but misguided group of Quaker-inspired prison reformers here in Philadelphia saying, solitary confinement, it's the way to go. It's going to bring out the best in people. And Charles Dickens was saying, I'll give you the quote. Actually, leave it to Charles Dickens to give you a good soundbite. He said, I hold this slow and daily tampering with the mysteries of the brain to be immeasurably worse than any torture of the body. So he would argue that had they carried out the threat of the front wall looks like a castle. And so you look at that and you think, wow, if I go to that prison, my body is going to be physically punished. I'm going to be in a dungeon on a rack or a whipping post or something. That's the threat. Charles Dickens would tell you they should have carried out that threat. It'd be a kinder punishment than trying to affect the way that people think, which is something that's still debated in the operation of prisons today.
How long did it last as a prison?
Lasted for 142 consecutive years. It's one of those stats with Eastern State that's just mind-boggling. 142 years people lived in that building, and it ran as a solitary confinement prison for decades. They scaled it back in the late 1800s, so they began to modify and lessen the solitary confinement through a whole series of compromises, some of them for practical purposes, some of them for humanitarian purposes. And then officially in 1913, they gave up, and they said, this is no longer a solitary confinement prison. It's a congregate-style prison where people gather together, eat meals, go to work assignments in groups. And so from 1913 until it closed in 1971, it had a dining hall, it had a baseball diamond, it had a movie theater. It was a small city up there at 22nd and Fairmont, a couple blocks from the Art Museum. Of course, the city of Philadelphia surrounded it, so today it's in the middle of a gorgeous residential neighborhood up in Fairmont. But it ran as you say, at that point it was no longer a model. Most people living or working there had no idea that it had once been so famous. It was just this dinosaur of an old prison in the Pennsylvania prison system. And it actually became where they, in the 20th century, in the first half of the 20th century, it's where they sent the people they thought were irredeemable. And they sent people, the whole philosophy of prisons had changed. And they didn't have that optimism that everyone could be improved. And they began to send people to Philadelphia, to Eastern State Penitentiary in the early 20th century, who they thought were just irredeemable. That people just put them somewhere, and we'll keep society safe from these people. And then towards the end, the last couple of decades, it changed again, and it became where they sent the old-timers because we'd embraced this idea that people should serve life in prison. It's a controversial idea in some circles, but Pennsylvania was getting more and more lifers, and people who are serving life in prison tend to be some of the easiest people to work with because people eventually, they get older, they mellow out, they make their peace that this is what their life is going to be, and they want to make the best life they can make. And so often people who are serving long sentences are the people who are just they're often a stabilizing force inside of prisons, that they mentor younger people and they try to find some way to make something useful of their life. And so because Eastern State Penitentiary by this point was so old, it was no longer particularly secure, and they began sending the old timers to Eastern State, and it became a place. The nickname became the house, and it's where it was full of many, many older prisoners living out the last of their lives. They had a wonderful magazine that was written by the people incarcerated there, and it became a relatively peaceful and relatively quiet prison before it finally closed in 1971.
And, of course, if you'd like information about the history of Eastern State Penitentiary, and if you'd like to know more about how to visit, the hours, etc., how to become a member to support its work, the place to go is easternstate.org, easternstate.org. And for the exhibit that will be showing through September 12th, go to hiddenlives.org. And we're going to talk about that now, hiddenlives.org. My guest today is Sean Kelly. He is Eastern State Penitentiary, Senior Vice President and Director of Interpretation, and the project lead for Hidden Lives Illuminated. I'm Laura Lewis. This is Our Delaware Valley. So it is saved. We're going to go past the fact that it's saved from the wrecking ball. It's a penitentiary that started out in a novel way, the star pattern. It moves on. It goes through the history of American prison reform or prison thought is right there in one location. And when you visit, you have that movie theater, you have that medical area, a hospital, there's a chapel, a synagogue. I mean, you can see how prisoners live. And you mentioned Al Capone. You had the famous and you had the infamous. You had gangs in the 30s in there. It had its own life. This is one of the most teachable places about prisons in the world, isn't it? I mean, it's the whole gamut.
We think the United States doesn't have a national prison museum, although we think that we should. The nation needs one. There are 2.2 million people in prison. We have the highest rate of incarceration in the world by far. There's sort of no one in second place. So we think that the United States needs a national prison museum, and we think that Eastern State Penitentiary is the closest that we have. And thank you for that wonderful summary, Laura. I'm going to make you a tour guide. You're really good at that. The building has this extraordinary architecture, which reflects the changing philosophy for how to run a prison over the course of 150 years. And what we've added in the last 10 years is a lot of information about how prisons are run today. And so you get that final piece. You say, here's what people were doing during colonial times in the United States, and here's what people were doing in the early years of the United States when they built Eastern State Penitentiary, and here's how it changed and went through this big house period with the gangsters and a really violent period in prisons, and this more peaceful period in the late 20th century. And now we talk a lot about mass incarceration. We talk a lot about why the United States has so many people in prison. There's a lot of debate about that. Actually, we leave that to our visitors to decide why we've done this, but the United States has decided collectively that we need to put a lot of people in prison, and so we talk about that. We have an exhibit that has won a bunch of awards called Prisons Today that uses interactives and filmmaking to engage our visitors in that question of why are we doing this? Is it making us better? Where are we going next? You look at Eastern State's history and you see that every generation has their own approach. So the approach that we used in the 90s and the 2000s was, the technical term for it is incapacitation, and that's what sociologists call it. And it's just getting lots of people out of communities because you believe those people are dangerous. And to some degree, incapacitation absolutely is necessary. There are people who are dangerous in the world, and we need to be protected from them. But that became the model from the 70s. 70s, 80s. 90s into the 2000s, the model was just find people who you think are going to cause problems tomorrow and put them in prison today. And we did it to, we've done that with millions of people, built an $82 billion annual budget that was required to run our prisons. And so we're the only country that's ever done it. No one's ever, across history, across time, across the globe, no one's ever done anything like this, to put this many people in prison. And there is a lot of pushback now from all sides of the political spectrum that says maybe there's a less expensive way of doing this, maybe there's a more humane way of doing this, maybe we can keep our community safe without putting this many people in prison. So in our exhibit, we talk about California, New Jersey, New York, and Texas, places that have dramatically reduced the number of people in prison, thereby reducing the tax burden, and have actually increased public safety simultaneously. There's a lot of evidence that reunifying families actually stabilizes communities. Obviously, you have to do it carefully because, you know, most people accept there are dangerous people out there. But there's even the federal government now is doing it, trying to find ways to reunify some families that if it could be done safely and carefully, that's less expensive and it stabilizes communities and produces better benefits for the children in those families and all those things that you hope for. But there's no silver bullet. I'm not saying that that's the easiest way to do it. But our exhibits go into this stuff in detail about different models. And I'm making it sound a little dry. But there's lots of personal stories from these places and interactive games you can play to look at different strategies.
You have permanent collections and you have permanent displays that explain what you're seeing when you tour. But one of the things that fascinates me is how you have partnered with artists across the country and locally to stimulate conversation. Now let's talk about Hidden Lives Illuminated. We're talking about the people who are actually in prisons now.
That's right. We were inspired by a project that was similar but quite different. But we took our inspiration from a project out of Chicago. An artist named Damon Locks has been going into prisons and working with people in prisons to make animation. And then another artist named Maria Gaspar projected some of those films onto the outside of a prison in Chicago. And we saw that. And animation in prisons is it's a powerful combination because people in prisons can't use cameras and they can't obviously leave to make a movie on location somewhere. But animation allows you to make a movie with all the traditional forms of movie making, you know, with your narrative arc and your narrative perspective and all that kind of technical stuff about how you put together a film, all that in locations and voiceovers. You can do all that stuff with animation without a camera and without leaving the building. Animation is tedious and slow. Not to make a joke out of it, but some of the people that we've been working with, some people in prison are actually quite busy. You know, a lot of people are working on, they're studying and they have connections to their families. So try not to assume that everyone in prison has a ton of time. That said, in general, they have more time than a lot of us out here. And they've spent a year, we hired some terrific, just extraordinary teaching artists to go in and teach screenwriting, to teach those methods of filmmaking, and to write scripts and to make animation. And we have 20 brand new original films made by people living in prison, and we are projecting them on the outside wall of Eastern State Penitentiary. So there, we found that we try to tell stories from multiple perspectives. We work closely with people in law enforcement. We work closely with victims' advocates groups. Those are obviously absolutely critical voices. For this project, we wanted to bring the voices of people living in prison outside. It's been my experience that most people living in prison are very eager for any way to make the world a better place. There's this cliche that people in prison tell you they're innocent. It's not my experience. I think people in prison often know they messed up, and their environment tells them every day that they messed up, and they get up in the morning, and if they have any opportunity to make the world a better place, in my experience, they go for it. So if people in prison who have kids are usually very dedicated parents, people in prison who are students are usually very rigorous and disciplined students. There's a lot of mentoring that goes on inside of prisons. A lot of people trying to rewrite the narrative of their life to say, I'm a good person, because, you know, people in prison, many of them have made serious mistakes, and obviously they need to pay for those. But I literally went to Chester, State Correctional Institution at Chester, and I stood in front of the entire prison population. I said, anyone want to learn animation? You know, we're going to project these films on the outside of the building. And it appealed to a lot of people inside that prison who wanted to make the world a better place and to tell cautionary tales, try to inspire the next generation to make better choices than they made, to inspire people on the outside to see the humanity of people in prison. Many of the people in prisons aren't going to be going anywhere anytime soon. soon, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't treat them with dignity while they're incarcerated. And so the Department of Corrections, people keep asking us how we chose the students, and the answer is the Department of Corrections chose the students for us. But we have 20 people who've made gorgeous, gorgeous films, often expressing remorse and regret, often expressing the love for their family and for their children. We've broken them into four themes. Week three is the theme is family and community impact, and those are all the films that are about, most of them are about people's kids, and they're really just kind of these love letters to their children, and with a lot of remorse and a lot of regret for the failure in parenting that people know they've made when they've become incarcerated.
How do we see the films? And it's going through the 12th, so there is still a few days left to attend this. You said you have bleachers set up, so this is free to the public.
It's absolutely free. It's projected on the outside of Eastern State Penitentiary. This is cliche, and it's not even cliche, it's true. People in prison often say that the prison walls don't just keep the prisoners in, they keep the public out. And prison walls work both directions. People in prison feel very isolated from society. We wanted to use our prison wall to do the opposite. Like, can we make our prison wall connect people? And so we're projecting this on the outside of the prison. You can sit on either side of Fairmont Avenue on bleachers, and we have big, powerful speakers out there. And the films are gorgeous, and they're projected. Each film is only about a minute and a half long. A minute and a half of animation, by the way, is 760 drawings, so it's a lot of work. But a typical TV commercial is 30 seconds, so it's like three TV commercials in a row. You can really say something in a minute and a half. They're projected on the outside wall. It's totally free. We have guest films as well, often made by people incarcerated in other parts of the country. And during this project, we're projecting them from the OCF Coffee House, which is directly opposite Eastern State Penitentiary. And inside the OCF Coffee House, every night we have interactive activities that are all of this is family friendly, by the way. It's, we worked a lot with the guys making the films to say, just keep in mind, there's going to be people walking their dogs and kids in strollers. And it's, so this is not the place for every story that you want to tell, but this is, everyone in the class had a story they could tell. But there's all sorts of interactive activities. You can write notes to the filmmakers, you can write notes to legislators and request types of change that you would like to see. And we have speakers every night in the coffee shop. There's a 7 o'clock showing. It's not very dark at 7 o'clock. I recommend going to either 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock showing, and it's every night until September 12th. And you can see different films, different weeks. And September 12th itself, if you're going to pick one night, that would be the night. Because September 12th, we're going to show all 20 of our student films on one night. We're going to close down the street to traffic, put in giant bleachers. And at 8 o'clock on September 12th, we're going to show all 20 of our students' films back to back with speakers in between, some political leaders, some community leaders, some musical performances. The son of one of our filmmakers made a gorgeous film about his son, who's a musical prodigy. And it's a sort of this just love letter to his wife and an expression of remorse, but deep respect for his son. Anyway, his son's going to play, a little musical interlude, and it's going to be a great night. So,
and that is September 12th, the September night 12th. That Hidden Lives will conclude, Hidden Lives Illuminated. We are down to our last minute. Wrap it all up and bring us home.
Well, if you can't make it to Eastern State Penitentiary for Hidden Lives, and even if you can watch all 20 of the films on our website. You can do it right now. Take out your cell phone. It's hiddenlives.org. Click through to the films. You can watch them right now. And they're gorgeous and heartbreaking and sad, and some of them are hilarious, and they're great. Eastern State Penitentiary itself is open 7 days a week, and we're open from 10 to 5, and we hope, of course, that people can come in and visit us. We have an active membership program, and we are growing quickly. So if you haven't visited Eastern State in a couple years, now would be a great time to come out and visit.
And, of course, memberships and the tour prices, et cetera, goes to continuing the restoration. You're continually opening areas and restoring sections of this prison. So it goes a long way towards keeping it going.
It's a constant effort to open more and more of that building. The building is 10 and a half acres. It's a sprawling, it's really a campus of buildings behind those walls. And we've been putting roofs on buildings, stabilizing foundations. Right now, it's a big push to stabilize our outside wall. It's easy to ignore it. It's the most obvious aspect of the building, but the wall needs a lot of work. And so we've been going through it. It's extremely expensive to repoint half a mile of wall.
Oh, I can imagine that it is. I can imagine that it is. And of course, all of this information is available at easternstate.org. And there you'll find the times, how to visit the prison, what to expect when you get there. there. Also, information about the restoration work and, of course, a schedule of other installations that will be appearing, because this is not a one-off. Eastern State Penitentiary has beautiful art throughout the year. Go to easternstate.org. And for Hidden Lives, to see the films, if you cannot make it in person, hiddenlives.org, the place to go. And my guest today, Sean Kelly, Eastern State Penitentiary Senior Vice President, Director of Interpretation, and obviously loving project lead for Hidden Lives Illuminated. Thanks for coming in today.
It's so great to be back. Nice to see you, Laura.
Oh, you got to come back more often. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.